Hey guys, it's me, Sam Stein, managing editor at The Bulwark. I'm joined by Will Sommer, author of False Flag, one of our new newsletters. Will, thanks for joining us. You wrote about the Daily Wire today. People probably know what that is, but just as a reminder, it's Ben Shapiro's media empire. It is, I think, objectively a behemoth, big force on the right. I don't have the stats in front of me, but it does great numbers.
It did great numbers.
It did great numbers.
Right. The numbers may be going down.
Well, let's talk about that, because what sparked our interest was sort of a rather abrupt, what do you want to call it, a resignation? Yeah. Stepping down of its co-CEO, Jeremy Boring. Tell the viewers what exactly is happening at Daily Wire and why this is a big deal.
Yeah, so Jeremy Boring is one of the guys who co-founded The Daily Wire with Ben Shapiro. So he's one of the OGs there. He's the boss, you know, and he was very much like a public-facing guy. Like, he was as much of a personality as Ben Shapiro was in terms of The Daily Wire. Ben Shapiro doesn't live in Nashville, where The Daily Wire is headquartered. So Boring was really, like, really the guy in charge, and in many ways, sort of like the future of the brand, if you will.
So why did he step down?
Well, you know, stay tuned. We don't really, well, you know,
what
officially,
have you found out from your reporting?
Well, officially, they said, you know, this was very abrupt. I mean, just a few months ago, he was like, you know, we're making $200 million revenue. Like, we're going to cash out this company, basically. Like, I'm going to sell it to Fox News or someone like that and whatever. And so, or maybe we'll be the New York Times, he said. But instead, they say, Jeremy's stepping down and he's just going to be doing a monthly podcast now and, you know, handling a couple entertainment things. And Ben Shapiro gave him a very like, wow, what a great run. Best of luck to Jeremy. You know, like yeah, a very kind of shove him out the door.
Yeah. In the press release, The Wire said Boring was trading his co-CEO position for what they called an advisory role, handling the company's creative projects that he'd appear on the monthly podcast. And then Shapiro's quote is, we can't wait to see what he does next. I'm not going to like try to read too far between lines, but it doesn't take much. That's not usually how you celebrate someone on a successful tenure. It's sort of giving them an off ramp so they could save face.
Exactly. And so, you know, it seems like something's going on here. I have heard stories about, you know, Daily Wire troubles for years. And meanwhile, you know, publicly facing, the company seemed to be doing great. They were getting all these profiles like Jeremy Boring's, the new Rupert Murdoch, all this kind of stuff. And so now really the question in right wing media, where this guy was very well known, you know, is what happened, you know, all these figures.
Well, let's back up a little bit, because talk a little bit about the Daily Wire, like its history, what it does, who it's influential with, and why it had such promise and such reach.
Sure. So the Daily Wire has really been sort of the breakout digital media success story of the conservative movement. You know, it started initially with Ben Shapiro, but it has other people too. It has Michael Knowles, who is a big kind of podcast YouTube guy. It has Matt Walsh, who people may know from his documentaries, such as they are What Is a Woman and Am I Racist, which was, if you can believe it, the highest grossing documentary in the country last year. And so it's had its success.
How much did it make?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, maybe it was a lean year for documentaries.
But it was everywhere. It really was everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's that. And, you know, but it has the ambitions beyond just kind of like various political things. I mean, they really believe in Andrew Breitbart's, you know, often quoted maxim that politics is downstream of culture. And so they want to kind of become not just, you know, right wing, like the biggest talk radio or podcast company, but they want to be like right wing Netflix. And so they have like a sort of a kids channel, which is like they have kind of like if you take Bluey, but you put in chinchillas instead. And they have, you know, they have kind of like a whole streaming thing they're trying to do.
Should we do a kids channel at the Bulwark? Would that be something that you'd be interested in taking on? As part of
never Trump cartoon characters, like elephants or something.
Little cartoon elephants that kind of dance around the Capitol. Yeah.
I think we could do it. Yeah.
Each week they have a new task for stopping Trump. Talk a little bit about how Candace Owens plays into this, because she was such a dynamic personality and big draw. And then, of course, huge flame out over very anti-Semitic rants. And she and Ben Shapiro were at loggerheads for a while.
You know, this is why I love covering this stuff, because the drama never stops. And so, you know, a lot of that, you know, in the past few years has come from Candace Owens, who was a, you know, was sort of like a right wing personality who was on the rise. But not, I would say, like a top 10 luminary until she, you know, first just hung out with Kanye, and then the Daily Wire picked her up and really right. made her, I mean, obviously she put a lot into it as well. And they kind of positioned her into this like very, very prominent podcaster and YouTuber. And then in the past year, especially after October 7th, there became this split because, you know, Ben Shapiro's Jewish and very like into that and into supporting very. Israel.
Yeah.
Jeremy Boring, they kind of ideologically, they're very supportive of Israel. Meanwhile, Candace Owens became increasingly not just critical of Israel, but like just into anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, all this kind of crazy stuff. Right. I mean, now she's maybe best known on YouTube for believing that the French president's wife is trans. And there's kind of like this twisted decades long masquerade going on.
Oh, my goodness.
And I mean, people love the content, I guess. So she basically had the Daily Wire and her, when she was still employed there, had all this back and forth where they were kind of openly feuding even when she was still employed there. Then they split a year ago to Tuesday when Jeremy Boring stepped down. So I don't know if there's
maybe there's something about curse. This day. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that for being serious, like there's some of it's personality driven. But I think some of it's got to be attributed to kind of broader trends in the conservative media echo chamber. And basically, I would say probably media writ large, right? Like everything is sort of driven now more by individual personalities, the sub-stackification of the media. The Daily Wire kind of had personalities under an umbrella, but you write in the piece that conservative media specifically is going way more towards the Nick Fuentes direct-to-camera personality-driven style. Did that play a role here? Is that sort of the subtext? And I guess maybe my bigger question is like, if there was a nut graph to this story about Boring stepping down, what would it be? Like, why does this matter in the broad sense?
Yeah, right. I mean, I think the reason people should be interested in this stuff is because it suggests that there's some problem at the Daily Wire that led up to this.
Right. And that perhaps is it a personality problem or is it an industry problem?
Well, I think it may be an industry problem, and it okay. may be suggested, you know, I think the Daily Wire has been cited as this example of like, you know, left wing or mainstream media is doomed. It's going to be the chinchilla show from here on out. You know, right. it's Ben Shapiro's taking over. And, you know, perhaps at least in this version as presented by the Daily Wire, that's not the case, because I think if Jeremy Boring, even I think like the speculation about like what may have kind of been the proximate cause of his downfall. I think if you're saying this is a guy who built a company with $200 million in revenue, all this stuff, if that's real, then it's strange to me that he got this kind of unceremonious exit. So I think it suggests that there may be other issues going on.
Well, what are the other issues that could be going on? I'm just trying to think about sort of the scope of the media universe, where it's like, on the one hand, things seem fairly good, honestly, for places like the Daily Wire, but clearly they're not. And it's sort of interesting because I remember being at HuffPost, for instance, when Obama came in. You know, they were ideologically more close to Obama than obviously John McCain, right? But it created different challenges for that. It wasn't like people were showing up and listening to our stuff the same way when Bush was in office, because oppositional media tends to be more fruitful. It's probably too early to know if like there's a negative Trump effect here happening. And yet I hear it I hear it regularly from media reporters and people in the know that like right-wing media is finding this moment a little bit challenging.
Yeah, I mean, this is a classic issue faced by partisan media. You know, when your party's in power, people are tuning in less. I think also, you know, as you said, you had this issue where the cost to entry is so low to launch a new operation like this. You build up these characters like Candace right. Owens. They just have to hire a video editor, go off and do their own YouTube thing.
I mean, look at what we're doing right here. Well, absolute bare bones video. Just kidding. Jamie,
well, I have a crew of 20 behind
Jamie,
me.
I love you. But seriously, it's funny because we have another piece coming up on Candace Owens written by it's not live yet, but at least not as we're recording this, by Elise Hoag. And it looks at Candace Owens, who, you know, rightfully a pariah in certain quarters because she was so anti-Semitic, but she's kind of recast herself as a commentator on the Blake Lively trial. And she has a huge audience. And really, the point of entry is just, do you have a production crew? Like to do a mm-hmm. to do a video, and that's it. And it makes it harder for larger outlets to compete in a way. But Daily Wire had been competitive, if not, you know, incredibly influential. So I find this very interesting.
The other trend I didn't point to in the piece, but I've since thought of, is that a lot of these things have migrated into sort of more palatable venues anyway, like Joe Rogan, the kind of like the bro type
podcast.
What
do you mean by that?
Well, I think if you're looking for someone who's kind of going to like get into some culture war stuff from a right wing point of view, have this kind of chat format, I think you probably, I mean, it, just based on like the size of their audiences, I think Joe Rogan or someone like Andrew Schultz or Theo Vaughn is a more right. palatable venue, more competitive than like Andrew Klavan, who's one of the Daily Wire people, or Ben Shapiro. I mean, these guys are kind of older school, even Shapiro, who's relatively young, but right. I mean, he's kind of like a Ted Cruz type of guy. And I think these other guys have a fresher format that they've sort of assimilated a lot of the Daily Wire's politics and talking points.
All right, we got a last. We got to end this with. I kind of did a double take around this whole idea of a King Arthur series that Boring wanted to do. What the hell is that about? Like, I couldn't really make sense of it.
This is a funny one because you kind of run through all these like, well, maybe it's the challenges of a modern media company, or maybe it's the incredibly hubristic Game of Thrones style production in Italy and Hungary that brought him down. So yeah, so Jeremy Boring has been, I think it's fair to say, obsessed with a fantasy series called the Pendragon Cycle,
right.
For 25 years. As a sort of wannabe Hollywood mover and shaker long ago in North Hollywood, he read this book and he basically said that he learned about movie rights because he was like, I need to make a movie of this. How do I get the rights?
What is the book exactly?
So it's about King Arthur, but it's set in like Roman era Britain rather than sort of a more kind of medieval chivalric Britain. Okay. And he says he likes that specifically. And so it's a lot more kind of like Viking-y.
Gladiator when he's out there conquering.
Exactly. And so because of the Daily Wire's enormous revenues, they were in their streaming ambitions. Jeremy Boring was able to become not just like to finance this, but he is the director and the creator of it. This like incredibly ambitious operation. And so like they made these production diaries. And so I watched these videos on YouTube of them filming it. And you look at it and it's like, are they capable of doing this? I mean, we're talking about like 100 extras, like fist fighting in a marsh in Hungary, like the mist is coming in, all like enormous crews. Then they're like, well, we're flying off to Italy.
And this was on the Daily Wire's dime they were doing this?
Yes.
Oh my God.
And it's, we're flying to Italy to film with bulls, but they were imported from Spain. So it's all good. Like it's authentic. And you're just like ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. And yeah, it still hasn't come out.
Well, that might explain some of this departure agreement where you're spending millions on a bizarre project set in Roman era Britain, but filmed in Hungary involving Italian bulls meant to be from Spain. Wouldn't advise doing that from a budgetary perspective. Okay. Well, on that note, I think we have some more clarity, definitely entertaining. And I'm glad that you wrote this one. Stay on the case. Will Sommer, everyone should be signed up for False Flag. It's fantastic already.